You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
We are back on the Massive Report podcast. It is probably pretty clear pretty quickly. We do not have Brian here. No Brian Phillips, though we will promote his radio station. Give him a listen on there. He had some stuff to take care of tonight, but we do have Bart Logan. Bart, how you doing tonight?
Hey, buddies.
And we are joined because we are filming this, or we're recording this via Zoom, not at the normal location at Saucy Brew Works, though we do encourage you to continue to go there, and we hope to be back there soon. We do have Adam Miller, Adam, who does our weekly breakdowns of the opponent and contributes some other stuff. Adam, you're joining us from parts far away. How are you doing out there?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me on. Weather's a little bit better here than it was in Central Ohio on Saturday, but yeah, happy to be joining.
Yeah, and Sam is going to eat some ribs quietly behind the scenes here and contribute when he wants to. Sam, thanks for setting this all up for us. Hope you're feeling all right. We are.
Go ahead. I'm feeling much better. I think the ribs will help too. So
there you go. So as Adam alluded to, there was a game on Saturday. It was rain delayed for quite a while. It actually worked out really well for me because I was in Vegas at a pool and then was able to get inside and go to the casino to watch the game. So that worked out well for everyone else, or didn't work out well for everyone else. But there was actually a game. Crew lose 2-0 to LAFC. Before we get into the game, Bart, you were there. The weather delay, it was the first one at lower.com field. What was the procedure? What all went down for people that, like myself, like Adam, like Sam, who were watching from afar? What was it like at lower.com field? How'd they get you information? Take us through the long delay.
Well, I guess I've got to tell on myself. I was at Betty's for pretty much the length of the delay. Probably not the right decision. You know, we kind of assumed, well, this isn't going to be too long, and then it kind of kept going, and you kept getting every time there's a new thunderstrike or bolt of lightning, okay, add another 30 minutes onto it. We were just basically checking Twitter for updates. And then after about 2.5 hours of waiting for that and starting to see, you know, stuff that I'm not even sure what was necessarily the case, but floating around about like a, you know, curfew that if the game wasn't started at a certain time, it wouldn't be able to get played that night. So I actually ended up going and watching from home after 2.5-3 hours waiting for it. We thought, you know, we'd save some money by staying at Betty's, but I regret it wholeheartedly. Because you could have been, you know, underneath, we had the shade of a tree to kind of keep you some, you know, a little bit dry, but I think lower.com field, even though my understanding is some of the leaks in the ceiling are still there, or the roof, it was much better than a tree. Even if you had to pay for $10 beers inside. But at the same time, you know, I don't know, hats off to everyone that did wait through that and then got to watch that performance, because you deserved a lot better.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was actually pretty impressed that there were still that many people there, given how long the delay was and the weather didn't look great. I guess we can only talk about the weather for so long before we actually have to talk about this game. As I mentioned, LAFC comes in.
We can do it longer. It was bad.
Yeah. Well, so, and we've talked, I feel like we talk about this almost every week when the Crew don't win, is like, there were plenty of good things early on for the Crew. They did some they had some chances. They controlled a lot of the game. Caleb Porter after the game, and, you know, agree with him or not, said he thought it was the first 60 minutes the team had put together. I'm not sure that's true, but I thought the team played all right. Then you have two mistakes in the early portion of the first half, one coming right after Yaya Boah scores a goal that's called back for what was a pretty tight but probably a correct offside call. Adam, you've broken down this team. You broke down LAFC before. What did you see as you were watching the game and kind of how things shifted from one half to another and obviously ended up in a Crew loss?
Yeah, it was interesting from my perspective. I kind of tend to agree with Poor that I don't know if it was the best 60 minutes they played. I thought they were pretty good in the beginning of the game. Certainly, if you look at the first half, I thought they were on the ball the majority of the time and they had LAFC pinned back quite a bit. I think the problem that the team continues to face is when they do play like that and they are kind of controlling the game, they don't really take advantage of it. And then eventually there's mistakes like you mentioned or lapses in defense, and now they're chasing the game, which is not necessarily what Caleb Porter team is built to do. So this is something that keeps happening, so it's a frustrating thing. And I know I've seen my fair share of people being frustrated with Porter saying they play well until things went bad, and most of the time he's right, but things keep going bad, so it's kind of this weird limbo of they play well, they make a mistake, they go down, chase the game, and they can't do it. So it's interesting, but I did think that the Crew, especially in the first half, were probably a little bit better, especially given all of the delays and the weather and everything else that they kind of had to deal with. But mistakes cost, especially in those kind of circumstances. So here we are.
Yeah, and with the weather, Caleb said there were 6 or 7 times where they told the guys, all right, we're about to go out and play. And then they had to sit back down again in the locker room. Obviously, they started the game for those that didn't watch it. They started the game, played like 2 minutes and 34 seconds or something, and then had to go back in for a little bit. So, both teams had to deal with that. There's no excuse there. Yeah, exactly. I don't think no one made an excuse about it. But I do think that throws things off a little bit. I think it's fair to point out that LAFC did not start probably their first choice lineup. Carlos Vela wasn't in there. He came in at halftime. Rodriguez came in at halftime. So the Crew, controlling things, but maybe not the best of one of the best teams in MLS early on. But I think it's the same thing we've been talking about, right? Those chances that you have, you've got to convert. And not that there were clear cut chances, but there were a few, especially really early on. I think it was James Igbekeme got on the end of a ball that, just kind of pinged around in the box. You put that in there, the game changes. If Yayaboa is just an inch maybe onside early in the second half and that goal counts, who knows how that changes the dynamic of the game. I feel like this team just can't kind of get out of its own way right now in terms of A, not finishing chances on one end, and then B, struggling to avoid these costly mistakes. And this week, surprisingly, it's Darlington Nagbe and Josh Williams, two guys who have been so good for this team, not just this year, but in years previous. Bart, you are a resident Josh Williams lover and representative of GCG Bag. I mean, Darlington Nagbe's passes, the first one obviously was kind of a bad touch that went astray and Josh Williams couldn't get on the end of it. Carlos Vela does. And the second one, maybe Ale Room could play a little bit better, but again, Josh kind of involved there. I thought he played all right otherwise. What did you make of both of those goals?
Here's the thing. I mean, with that second one, it's just, or the first one rather, it's Josh Williams is who he is, 33, 34 years old. You have him and Carlos Vela, do a dead sprint. Vea's going to beat him. And so that's the result you're going to get. I am far more concerned. And one thing is like, look, would Josh say, hey, I should have done that, should have done better. I don't know what you can do. Man has his physical limitations and he's not the one who's setting the lineup. What concerns me more is the Darlington Nagbe passes and turnovers. That is very atypical of the kind of player he is, and both teams obviously playing in the weather. I think the Crew grounds crew did a really good job with that field, but you know, maybe, I don't know if I'm Aloy Room, I don't play a short pass out the back like that. And I don't know if that's a decision on the second one. I don't know if that's a Room decision versus a Caleb Porter instruction. But I think it's, I mean, these are just complete bonehead. And that's the big concern for me there. It's, you know, I think Darlington Nagbe is going to learn and he's not going to make mistakes like that really, but I wouldn't think that he would make mistakes like that in the first place either. And this is a point that Matt Doyle from MLS.com actually made. And this is, I think, the thing that kind of scared me the most, and the thing that I'm more mad about, you know, Josh about than not being able to catch up with a guy like Carlos Vela, was just the fact that after those goals, there's just no real reaction. No, you know, Aloy Room not chewing guys out, Josh Williams not chewing guys out. I mean, we've talked about this a couple times on the podcast where it's like, you know, Milos Jegnek may be the, you know, the guy that on paper you'd rather see, but Josh Williams is that sort of heart and soul, you know, heart on his sleeve kind of guy that'll call yeah. people out and pull people up by their, you know, wrist to get them going. That wasn't happening. And I think there needs to be some sort of accountability, and you need to see it on the field, because there was just nothing, no reaction from anyone. And when you're reacting after goals like that with nothing, then you have no reason to believe that you're going to go in and do anything else on the other end of the field. And they didn't.
Yeah. I mean, you're right on Nagbe. Those aren't mistakes he's made, I mean, throughout his career. I think to have two of those, especially in one game, is really tough. And you know, obviously when you're playing an LAFC team that has the attacking talent, they're able to capitalize on those mistakes. Adam, you watch a lot of MLS. Where do you rank LAFC in terms of top teams in this league on their day? Because I think we looked at this stretch, you know, even going back, I think Caleb pointed out several weeks ago, starting with that away game at Sporting Kansas City. And Sporting Kansas City hasn't been what they've been in previous years, but you're on the road there and whatnot. And this was the stretch that they knew was going to be the most difficult. And, you know, this may be the end. Atlanta hasn't been as good, but you played New York City FC last week. You did get a point in New England this game. Kind of where do you rank LAFC in terms of these teams the Crew have played recently?
Yeah, I mean, I think on their day, like you're saying, when they're playing their full strength lineup, I would say they're at the top of the league, certainly at the top of the West. This stretch was always going to be tough. But I also think, you know, you kind of knew that coming into it as well. So there's a little bit of Caleb Porter. I think he said this in his pre-match availability, talking about, you know, I know my group, I know my guys are up for it. And LAFC and New York City, I don't remember which one exactly that was, but theoretically you would assume that his team would be up for both those games. And I thought yeah. that especially when things started to not go well, they looked relatively lifeless. So I don't know if that's a reflection on the leadership in the locker room, the coaching staff or what, but kind of feels like something goes wrong and it's kind of like, well, here we go again type thing, as opposed to some sort of positive reaction to change it. I don't know where that comes from. I don't know who exactly that falls on, but that does feel like a big issue with this team, because especially over the course of a long MLS season, things aren't always going to go your way. The crew fans and the Crew players are certainly finding that out now. And the players don't necessarily seem to react very well to those things.
I just want to disagree with Vart about one thing. You said there was no reaction after each one of those goals. And I have to disagree, because the reaction was, here we go again. Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, psychologically, I think this team knows that they cannot score goals right now. And because of that, they know that, what was it, the 77th minute that LA scored? Mm-hmm. They're like, they already know, they've already given up, because they know they've scored two goals and they were both offside, and they're not going to be able to score. And I think mentally that is weighing on this team, because they're all pressing, all of them, top to bottom, starting with Lucas, all the way down the room. They're all pressing, trying to overdo it. And what's happening is that it's creating rash decisions, just like Eloy's pass. It's creating just not full-hearted. Like, they're not doing the hockey thing, which is tape to tape. Mm-hmm. There's just bad, unnecessary decisions.
Yeah, and you know, maybe no reaction, because that was my thought again, that, you know, again, that it's, yeah, here we go again, and sort of reserved to the outcome instead of, you know, an anger, and these are not mistakes we make, you know, kind of getting fired up about it and just accepting that outcome and you know, giving themselves to the benign indifference of the universe. And I you know, I think that's one of those that, look, if that's not, you know, in the locker room, you can't replace the entire team. So who do you, you know, where does the personality of a team, you know, where does that mindset come from? Who sets the tone? If the players aren't doing that for you, then I look up at the top. And you know, are you allowing that? You know, are they learn it from you, Dad? I don't know what it is, but it's really discouraging, because there's just nothing. I mean, this team has won one game since week four of the season, and they haven't really, you know, they've hardly competed. They're not winning at home. And again, yeah, yes, maybe the one of those goals, but even, and I am no fan of Fresh Cut, Victor Rivas, the referee, but he was right. Yeboah's off for both of those, and you're not going to get those goals. This wasn't, you know, a VAR MLS conspiracy, Don Garber. This was, dude was offside, and just to not be able to do anything else. And if players are, you know, gripping, but this is like the fourth or fifth time in Caleb Porter's tenure that we've had this same conversation about guys are just too wound up and they're trying too hard and they just can't catch a break. And that's where I am right now. I just don't know. I don't know if the solution is in the room.
Well, and I think it's interesting, and I want to talk about Caleb in a minute, because we've more or less kind of avoided that on this podcast, but I think the conversation needs to be had. But before we do that, I think, you know, there have been the games where they've come from behind, right? We saw it early in the season at San Jose. Now, they did also give up 2-goal lead there, but they did it at New England after giving up 2 goals in the second half. So this team has shown that it can do some things and fight back and whatnot. It just doesn't seem to be consistent, maybe, to me.
Yeah, those are the exceptions, not the rule, I feel like.
And that may be the case. So, you know, you mentioned Caleb Bart, and, you know, I even wrote about it a little bit today in our What We Learned story. If you're 1 to 10 on your confidence in Caleb, 10 being supremely confident, 1 being not confident at all, you know, where do we stand right now? Because, you know, obviously we've talked about it. He won the MLS Cup in 2020. It was a weird year, but it's still a trophy. They won the other trophy last year, whose name I don't remember because I don't think of it as being that exciting.
Campionis.
There you go.
Don't you forget it.
Two of his three seasons.
Lucas De La Rayon's tiny, tiny little MVP trophy.
Two of the three seasons have been without the playoffs and obviously disappointing. Now, the first season you can talk about, doesn't have his guys. Last year's, there's injuries. This year hasn't started the way people thought. So, Bart, we'll start with you since you kind of brought it up. Where's your confidence level on a scale there?
Not great, Bob. I'll go with a 2 right now. Just because, you know, I'm grateful, and I'll forever be grateful to Caleb for that MLS Cup and to a lesser extent the Campeones Cup. But I think, you know, you have to look at the body of his work, and unexceptional first season, which again, you know, that reasons that you laid out, but there are also plenty of coaches that come in. It's not like he came in, you know, midway through a season. There are lots of, and that there wasn't, you know, anyone there. There are lots of coaches that come in, you know, in those situations and have success in their first season. He didn't, but and then, you know, you've got 2020, which was just a complete, you know, grab bag year. All the other teams were dealing with the same stuff, you know, same circumstances. So I'm not, you know, taking that away from him, but it wasn't, you know, they didn't do it over the course of a 34 game MLS season. They did it over the course of a compressed season that started and stopped, and they happened and great, you know, luckily they had good fortune when it came to the playoffs, where they didn't have to play a single road game. I don't know if they win that if they play a single road game. And then last year, and then look at the body of this year. And my concern is, you know, there's been so much that's made about how poor these teams, how historically bad they have been on the road, you know, below the mean, below the median for MLS teams. But the other flip side of that is you need to be exceptional at home. And he's not been exceptional, especially of late, but even, you know, last year and stuff, because if you're exceptional at home, you're a 500 team and you're making the MLS playoffs in another one of these years. And that's not been the case. And every team has injuries and every team has call-ups. But this is a team that is built to win now, okay? You don't have a whole bunch of, you know, this isn't a Dallas team that's got like a bunch of 16 and 17 and 18-year-olds coming up. You've got guys like Darlington Nagbe, who are in the prime of their careers, Lucas Elarayan, who are in the prime of their careers, you know, Steven Moreira, who's in the prime of his career, Pedro Santos, who's at the back end, Jonathan Mensah, prime of his career, Josh Williams, you know, probably on the back end, Darlington Nagbe, prime to the back end of, you know, if you aren't ready, and if you're going to say you don't have, you know, the players that can do this, I think someone else can probably get something to be at least the sum of the parts, but you're not even getting the sum of their parts right now, let alone beyond that. And again, so I appreciate Caleb for all he's done, and I gave him the benefit of the doubt all last year because he won in 2020. But you got to put up or shut up right now, and they aren't. And like, you can keep saying that, oh well, the numbers said otherwise, but the numbers said otherwise last year, and he still didn't. And so at some point, you need to have the results. It's not just about the process, because your process doesn't mean anything if you can't make it to the postseason and do something with it. You need results at some point.
Adam, what do you think?
Oh man, this is a hard one for me. I think honestly, I go back and forth on it in my own brain, like twice a day at least. I've been like the number one, maybe not number one. I've been like, Caleb Porter is my profile pick on Twitter right now. I've been like a big fan of his for a long time, even before he got into Columbus. You know, 2019, I think I had some faith in him, even though they were garbage. And then obviously we've talked at length about 2020. Last year's disappointing. This year's not great. My confidence, if you would ask me the beginning of the year, I would have said it's probably like a 7. Now I'd say it's closer to a 4 or 5. I don't know necessarily if the right thing is to move on. There's a lot that goes into that. Yeah. And I don't know if, I was thinking about it just in preparation for this, podcast, you know, I don't know if he's necessarily been dealt a great hand in terms of, some of the moves they've made this year, and we can get into that or not, but, some of it is people adjusting to the league. Some of it is, maybe people aren't as good as they've showed or haven't been playing as well. My problem with the majority of it is I do believe in Caleb Porter's tactical system and setup and how he wants to play. I think he's the problem I have with it. So I think the way he wants to do it works. The problem that I have with it is when he doesn't have the players to do it, or when the players aren't doing it, I don't know how, willing or capable he is to try and change into something new. I actually think we've seen a little bit more of that this year with some formational changes and things like that. But I mean, you could probably hear me doing it right now as I'm talking. I keep going back and forth on, is it his fault? Is it not? I mean, I used to coach for a long time, and like you always say, it's a player's game. Players need to take responsibility, things like that. The players also need to believe in what they're doing, believe in the coach. And I think that sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, it seems with Caleb Poirier right now. So that's a long-winded way of saying seated firmly on the fence right now. I can't really commit to one side or the other, because to Bart's point, they're not necessarily winning. They're not winning. They haven't been good in a long time, consistently good for a long time. But I do believe in what he's doing from a tactical standpoint. So, or I believe in what he's trying to do from a tactical standpoint. It's not working right now, but yeah.
Well, and I think to your point, Adam, I mean, we've seen it work with this team, both with under Caleb Porter and under Greg Berhalter, similar ideas of overall playing style. I do think that Caleb, and maybe this doesn't get talked about enough, he is very involved in the guys they bring in. And, you know, if Miloš Degnek or Vito Wormhoor or Yao Yeboa or, you know, name the guy, if they don't work out, Caleb's a part of that decision-making. Now, there's also been James Igbekeme. There's been, you know, guys from within the league. I mean, Derek Etienne has been one of their best players offensively this year, which isn't saying a ton. And Caleb was a part of that. So, yeah, I mean, I think in terms of building the roster, he's certainly a part of that. Sam, what are your thoughts?
Adam pretty much stole most of what I was going to say. but yeah, I'm also, that's okay. It's kind of like when you ask Caleb a question in the press conference and you're like, I have like three other follow-up questions, but then in his first answer, he answers all of them because he talks so much. Like Adam said, it's a tough position to be in because you feel that you have that, he has the mentality as a coach. I think actually what people are most mad about is what you said, Murph, and that is roster construction and how it doesn't, for one reason or the other, is failing him basically. And these are people that he I'm going to say he, because I feel that he has a bigger hand than Bez to a degree, since he's the one who has to coach these players and make sure that they fit in that system. And I think that the expectations of some of the players coming in has either not panned out or they just don't fit in the system the way they thought they would. Somebody like Yao Yeboah. But then again, you have a situation like Jonathan Mensah, which obviously was in there before he came, and how his first year went, and then where we are now with him. So you're like, okay, well, is it one of those things that's going to take him a year to adjust to the league? Before they're effective, before they can score goals, before they can do this. Well, that's great, but he's not in a position where he has that luxury of another year to sit on a player to develop. And that's where bringing in a player from within MLS kind of speeds up that a little bit. I think the failure here maybe, and failure of planning, is how this roster is constructed. Are there absolutely excellent elements on this roster that can compete? Yes. But for some reason, right now, they're missing a really important part, and that is somebody who can actually put the ball in the back of the net. And Miguel Berry was not the answer. But it seems that it wasn't about Miguel Berry scoring goals as much as it was about probably not keeping Giassi. You know, and that's why Miguel was starting. Derek Etienne, a bright spot, but can he be a consistent bright spot? We've seen him have flashes in years before, but you need that consistency. And so far, you haven't really gotten as much. But also, like, I think our good friend Jonathan T-Bone Smitty said, I don't think that forward is the only thing that can fix this roster mm-hmm. right now. And I agree, but I also disagree, because I think if you have somebody who can score goals, then how teams play you completely changes and then you open up the play for other players, for a Lucas Zelarayán. Lucas Zelarayán right now cannot get 2 feet with the ball without four defenders surrounding him almost immediately. So he's not going to be able to distribute. He's not going to be able to score. He's not being put in that position. And in terms, again, he's trying to push, and that doesn't end well because he just loses the ball. So yeah, I think I'm squarely in between that 4 to 5 range. Unfortunately, I feel that, I'm getting this weird. If you remember this, Robert Warzieha vibe when we got called in on Memorial Day, I believe, to a press conference to announce that he was for the announcement that he was leaving. I think it was Memorial Day because it wasn't Labor Day. But anyway, I hope they get it figured out. But I don't know. This is kind of a tough way to see it go.
Yeah, you said a lot of what I was thinking, Sam, in terms of the attacking options. You know, if the ball's going in the back of the net, I think there's less pressure, as you mentioned earlier, and therefore other things. Because I do think outside of the attacking third, there's been a lot of good stuff. For the most part, they've defended pretty well. Now, you know, Saturday being an exception, at New England a couple times. You know, it's not a perfect defensive system.
They make little mistakes, but those mistakes cost them every time.
Right. And so I think, you know, your midfield, you've got guys that you can rely on. Again, Saturday being an anomaly with Nagby. But, you know, if you just have a guy, you look at what New England did last year. And granted, they had some other guys that certainly contributed. But Buxa, we talked about this last week, what Buxa can do, what Castellanos can do for New York City. I mean, it just changes. And it doesn't have to be a forward. You look at what Vela did on Saturday, you know. So I do think that there's really, you know, in terms of Caleb's future, I think it's dependent on this guy coming in this summer and scoring goals quickly. And, you know, we talked about this last week and how you get a guy who can gel with the team right away. I think that's when, and, you know, I wrote today, I think the seat is starting to warm up. When you're losing at home like that, I think that's when you start to have issues. You should at least be figuring out ways to get results, especially when you're not playing in LAFC. But when they get a guy in, that's when I think, assuming that they follow through with what they said and sign a designated player striker, which I do believe they will. And, you know, that's when I really think the clock starts ticking on him, because now you don't have anything, you know, it's not a Miguel Berry anymore. It's not a Giassi Zardes where, you know, you make some points about, okay, he's at the end of his career. This was when we thought we could get value. You've said you're going to go get a guy. You go get the guy. Caleb's involved with it. If that's not working, then that's when I think it really starts to be, okay, when is this happening? I had someone ask me today if I thought that if they played poor in Atlanta, if they'd fire Caleb. And I just think they're going to give him that shot to do it with the attack that he envisioned. Now, you can also argue, why didn't they do this earlier? If they didn't, but I think they thought Miguel would be a better player, and maybe he will be at one point. But so I would say, you know, from my understanding of things, I would say the confidence is still there for Caleb. I would put my thing at a 6 and declining, but slowly, because I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt if they can find a forward that can put the ball in the back of the net. Cause I do think the other pieces are interesting. If there isn't that consistent pressure to score goals from other guys.
And that, I guess it's, again, just the frustration. And I've hit that because, you know, Giassi Zardes may not have been, you know, the answer. But I have a hard time when it's like, well, this is the value we could have gotten from. Well, you look the value that Colorado got. They basically got everything back, trading away whoever it was that Giassi displaced. You know, so they didn't get a good value for Giassi Zardes. And you can say, oh, well, you know, we wanted to do right by Giassi Zardes and give him a chance to win, you know, play in the World Cup. And I think that's great. And that's a luxury you could have if you had a proven commodity scoring goals for you, but you didn't have that. And, you know, ultimately, again, it's, if I think, Sam, the point that you made earlier, you know, about his of Caleb's hand in the construction of this roster, you know, creates, I think, even greater accountability that put on him. So, you know, maybe we wait, but what happens? You're going to be getting a guy that is not an MLS player, a proven MLS player. That doesn't mean they're not going to be a top quality striker. And I think striker is a position in theory you should be able to come in and succeed. If you're a, you know, top flight striker, you should be able to adjust to MLS a little bit easier than, you know, maybe a defender, midfielder, et cetera. But his track record isn't exactly sterling, especially with guys that don't have MLS experience. You know, are we just going to get that again? Maybe the excuse doesn't fly if it's, you know, oh, he just needs time to adjust to MLS. And maybe they say, you know, that excuse doesn't work, but that's what I'm prepared for. Cause I don't think we're going to get a striker in that's, you know, going to be a world beater and going to be Zlatan scoring, you know, that goal off a volley from midfield in his first touch in MLS, unless maybe we're getting him. I know he's done with AC Milan for this year. They got, you know, their cup, but I just thinking about his hand in the construction of this team, I think that just makes him even more culpable for this. You kind of hand built your team, and I'm not trying to also, you know, absolve Tim Bezbachenko of blame and accountability, but I think ultimately you gotta remove one variable first, and coach I think is the first variable, the easiest variable to test, and I'm not trying to, you know, be that guy that that's just, oh, we need to sack Porter. Cause again, I was there defending him, you know, all throughout last year. And, you know, if they turn around, they start winning a whole bunch of games, I will be on board, but it is a results business and there needs to be some sort of accountability. And I've never really seen him take a whole lot of accountability short of after he, you know, kind of had those comments about Jossy and then walked those back. I think that's the most personal accountability I've seen Caleb Porter take in his tenure from Columbus. And that was, you know, comments about a player, not about the performance or performance of the team.
Yeah. I think just to add on that, I think I wouldn't say I think he's super stubborn, like in how he sees the game and how he perceives the way the team plays. I think he's very stubborn in that he thinks it's the right way. Probably, I mean, he's won, we've talked about this, he's won everywhere he's been. So I think he's stubborn because I think he knows or feels that when they're playing the way they're supposed to be, he's got the right guys. I think he feels like it works. So I think he's stubborn. I think a goal scorer absolutely changes things for this team, like someone who can do it consistently. We talk about, like, I think you can, the vast majority of games this year we've been better early on, haven't scored, and then mistakes, now we're playing from behind. So I think someone to convert those chances helps. But the biggest thing I wanted to say is and Pat, you might know more than me, I feel like I remember Porter's contract being 5 years, so this would put him right in the middle of year four. From my perspective, I think if they're going to bring in a forward and he's going to be involved and he's theoretically involved in all these other guys, they get, you know, one of his guys, someone he likes. And I agree with you that that's when the clock kind of starts to tick, because if they're going to make a move, if we bring in a forward, some other guys he likes, and it doesn't pan out, we don't make the playoffs or whatever, I think he's 100% gone. But I think his clock really starts once they get all of the other guys that he wants, especially a striker, in place. And I think that whether that's right or wrong and whether that's a good way to go about it or not, I think that's the way that the crew in the front office are viewing it, because I think, you know, it was clear from the beginning of this year that Jossy wasn't necessarily going to be his guy anymore. So once they get that goal scorer back, I think that's when his clock starts to tick a little bit. Cause if you're going to make a move, you would make it theoretically at the end of this year. So
yeah.
That's my,
well, I think Adam, you bring up a few really important things there. And I want to add on, Caleb is a grinder. And, you know, I think that was part of what didn't work in 2019, was Greg was such a player's coach. And Caleb is a guy who just you know, wears on people. And that only works with so many guys. And for some guys, they can only deal with it for so long. And so, you know, there's a possibility that you've reached a point with a lot of these guys. And Giassi Zardes, you know, everyone knows what Giassi is as a guy. You know, I think that, this is just me speculating, but that may have reached that point where it just wasn't working between the two of them anymore. And that may have happened with other guys. And I'm not speaking on, I've not been told this by anybody. I've not heard this from any, you know, any sort of locker room issue or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, knowing Caleb and kind of following his career and sort of getting to know him these last few years. Yeah. He's definitely just that kind of coach. And sometimes it works and works and works. And then you kind of hit a wall where it doesn't. And, you know, I still think he can turn things around as we've talked about. But yeah. And I do think you're right, Adam. I do think it's a 5-year deal, if I remember correctly, from when they signed him, you know, prior to that 2019 season. So yeah. And the final thing I think that you pointed out sort of at the end there was, where do you go next? You know, the guys on this staff are Caleb guys. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's not, I'm not saying they wouldn't stick around to be an interim head coach, but that doesn't always happen. And then, you know, you have to find a permanent guy. Do you ride out the rest of the season like DC's doing right now, if you were to say fire him after this weekend or even in July? Or do you wait till the end of the year and, you know, hope that they can make a run? I mean, this team has to make the playoffs. I think that's the minimum expectation. And then you know, obviously the MLS Cup playoffs. But yeah, I think that's kind of where you stand right now. There's just a lot of factors. It's super easy to say fire and bring in someone else, but then you're starting over and, you know, depending on who the next coach is, maybe they want to play a completely different way and you're rebuilding the roster again. So just some things to consider.
Yeah. One more thing. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
I was just going to add on, I think we all agree. I think the majority of Crew fans like that. And the team is built to win right now. So getting rid of Caleb Porter, you know, who do you bring in that's going to guarantee who do you bring in that's going to be a proven MLS guy or a proven high level coach who's going to enable the team to win now? Or do you ride it out with Porter and, you know, supposedly the group of guys that he's picked that he believes in that he thinks will work, who's done it before? So, I mean, you could probably, like I said, I go back and forth on this every day. I don't think now's the right time personally. Who are you going to bring in that's going to guarantee that this team still has a chance to win now or have a better chance of bringing someone in or a better chance than Porter at making sure that the team that's built to win now can win now? I think if they don't make the playoffs or if they get rid of Caleb Porter, then it's probably a huge reset button and we're looking at a rebuild of the roster and bringing in a new young coach and whatever. But I think for what's available now and for where things are, I think you almost don't even have a choice but to stick out with Porter unless, you know, they lose for the next 3 months, 2 months or whatever.
Here's the thing though. Cause I agree, you know, that obviously you need to think long-term with decisions like this. But I don't think you necessarily have to, I think you can have an interim coach in there right now. Crew are 2 points from bottom of the table right now. Cincinnati has 6 points on the Crew right now. How much worse is a guy off the street going to be doing when you've got one win in the last 9 games? I think the floor, we really need to think about what the floor. So I think if you have another person in there, I'd look within our organization. I'd look at Laurent Courtois. And I mean that jokingly, and I mean that seriously, because you've got somebody there at least who's got some coaching experience. Again, this is a guy who's an assistant at LA for years, who's been in your organization, has been in the academy, but also, you know, in a longtime MLS player. I don't think that Laurent Courtois is the answer long term for the Crew, but it's if we're going to go about this, you know, again, kind of scientific method, right? Test the variable. So let's remove one variable. Let's see there, put something else in there. Okay, maybe it wasn't Caleb. maybe it's the players and you need to do a rebuild. But I think, I mean, how many teams do you see in sports throughout it when the removing a coach, you know, for whatever it is, especially if it's a coach who's got, you know, maybe an expiration date because he grinds on you. If you have anything, if you've got food with an expiration date, do you want to get rid of it before that? Or do you want to wait until after that expiration date to get it, you know, and keep trying it? That milk is not going to get any better. So I think at some point, again, you know, I'm not saying they need to do it now. Maybe they can, you know, maybe you can afford to wait until the window opens in what, July. But that's another month of June. If they lose four games in June, you know, lose six more games or don't have at least three wins in that span, you don't have a chance of making the playoffs, even if you've got, you know, a DP in there. Maybe you do. I don't know. But they've got to start showing something, because if he's lost the locker room, if the players, you know, aren't playing, if he's grounded them down to the point where Darlington Nagby is making mistakes like that, and Josh Williams, and neither of them are they're just both looking at each other and just saying, here we go again, then I don't know what you can do to win it. I don't think you as Caleb Porter can. Maybe he can't. I would absolutely love to be wrong. But at some point, you got to shit or get off the pot.
I think if he had lost the players, I think they would have made a change already. Personally, like, the fact that he's still here, from my perspective, mm-hmm. I think means that he still has at least the majority of the locker room still has some belief in there. I think the guys have been vocal about their belief in what they're doing too. I don't know that. That's my gut. Bez and owners seem to be pretty involved. They kind of know what's going on. I feel like if there was this feeling that he had lost the locker room, I think they probably, yeah, at that point, you're right, get rid of him, because it's not going to get any better. And nobody knows except the guys in the locker room. I don't know if he's got there or not yet. Pat, maybe you have more insight, but I feel like if they really were like, you know, over him or he is expired, I feel like maybe they go ahead and make a change. But I feel like we're kind of all holding on, hoping that, you know, eventually we'll the win now thing will work. So I don't know. I just, do you have anything to add to that, Pat?
No, I mean, it's been such a weird last couple of years, because for such a long time, we were around the team quite a bit. You know, we could talk to guys as they walked off the field at practice and things like that. And now it's all dictated by the team deciding who does interviews. I mean, there's guys on this team that I've never had a conversation with, just because they you know, with COVID and everything, they've separated so much. And it's supposed to be going back to that, though. We were supposed to have an open locker. Well, Thomas was supposed to have an open locker room on Saturday, and then they didn't open the locker room except to bring out two players in a different room than when they used to, where they did it for the press conference. So hopefully that gets fixed. I'm going to complain about that, because the locker rooms are supposed to be open, and that allows you to get a better sense of that. But I asked you guys beforehand about what you would do differently with this team right now. And for the listeners, you know, we're not talking transfers. We can talk about that stuff in a different podcast, but just tactically, personnel wise, I have some thoughts as well, but I'm interested to just, you know, not that Caleb Porter is going to listen to us, but you know, what do you guys see out there that maybe could change, that you think could change results? Adam, we'll go with you as a guy who's done this before on a coaching level and whatnot. What do you see that maybe you would tweak or whatnot to try and turn things around a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I have a huge list here. Not all of them would work. I think the biggest one, the one that I want to talk about first, is I think the Crew are way better when Aiden Morris is on the field, personally. That's a tough, yeah. At that point, you're removing Nagby or Artur. I don't know who you choose. They're way better when he's on the field, just in terms of their ability to win the ball back and their ability to play at a little bit of a different pace. I feel like the Crew midfield and is kind of like a cruise control midfield, like very smooth, very, you know, it's not a lot of accelerating. There's not necessarily a lot of decelerating. Not that they're not good players. I know we've been watching them for years now, but the Aiden Morris gives you a little bit something different. And he's got a little bit of a hunger that I think is contagious to most of the guys that I'm not sure Artur and Nagby have. I'm not sure that's the kind of player that they are. I think the Crew are way better when he's on the field. So that would be the first thing I would do is, and I have an idea for all this that maybe we'll talk about later, but like the first thing I would do is find a way to get him onto the field more often. He should be starting games, in my opinion. It just gives the Crew a little bit more energy and bite in the midfield. I think we miss a lot of that.
Well, that ironically plays into really one of the things I have thought about a lot. And because I think you can get those three on the field, those central midfielders on the field together, mm-hmm. whether you want to play a 4-3-3 or stick with a 4-2-3-1, right now you're not scoring goals with Miguel Barry out there. And I think you could even argue that Eric Hurtado is giving you a little bit more in terms of chance creation. And that's a scary thing right now. So I know Lucas hasn't looked great in the false nine, but you know, Lucas. Yeah. So if you push him up there, I know he's not comfortable with it. And I know it hasn't produced a ton, though it did lead to the goal in New England. Oh, I guess Eric was on the field for that, but I think you're not going to be any worse offensively with Lucas higher up the field. And I think you can then play Nagby either at the 10 or go with that 4-3-3. And I think that gets you your best options out there. You can keep James out there if you want. You can bring Derek back in and play with Yao on one side. I think there's a lot of different ways you could do that with getting your best guys on the field. And I agree with you completely about Aiden. He just, whatever it is, he has a way about him. And you saw it in the MLS Cup final, and you've seen it in bits and pieces since then. And I think he needs to be out there. I think Nagby, and I wrote about this today, take away the mistakes from this past game. There were a couple times when he made runs forward or played passes and ran off the ball. He needs to do that more. And I know that's not been his game his entire career, but he's capable of that. And I think when you're lacking offense, your second best player, probably, I think we all, he's right up there, needs to be closer to the goal, giving you something. And I know it's a little bit out of his game too, but right now people have to change in order to get results, get goals.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think if you push him further, you push Lucas further, you get your best group on the field, then you figure it out from there. And that's one of the things I think could be interesting.
The other thing, Aiden Morris, Crew are undefeated this season when he starts the game. I mean, you look that New England game, that DC game, he's got three starts, and then the SKC, you know, all of those, again, only one win off of those, but I've liked what we've seen from James a little bit at the wing, but I think Aiden Morris, if you're doing that 4-3-3, you need Aiden Morris in that midfield. And I think right now, maybe that is, you know, you look at trying to just get your best players on the field right now. And I think you find a way to have all three of those guys on there. And then you find a way to make it work with that top three, however that combination is. But right now I am totally in agreement that you need Aiden Morris on the pitch.
Yeah. And the other thing that I had that same kind of, formation or lineup written down, Pat, putting Aiden Morris in, pushing Nagby higher. If you play Zellerion kind of as a false nine, he's kind of a player who will drift kind of back into the midfield away from the back line. So what I think that gives the Crew an opportunity to do is get in behind a little bit more, pull the back line up, more space in behind. I feel like we never do that. I feel like every attacking chance the Crew has is going kind of around teams, if you will. Sometimes it, you know, looks better than the way I'm kind of describing it now. But even if you look at the best moments from just Saturday, they're all balls that are switched to the midfield and it goes out wide and then they're trying to play a cutback or a cross. I never feel like we go kind of through teams to get in behind. So I think playing Zellerion in that false nine role and drifting him back just a little bit towards that midfield will bring the defenders and give, you know, Yeboah and Matan and Etienne and Diaz, like those guys, a chance to try and get in behind a little bit more. I don't feel like we ever get in behind. We'll probably touch more on that later, but I think for what you're getting right now from Miguel Barry, there's no reason not to try something else. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And at least give it a run, right? I mean, we saw Lucas play there for the second half, most of the second half in New England, I think it was. But and let's be clear here, I'm sure they're working on things in practice. You know, it's we're not there. We haven't seen this play out in practice. But like you said, Adam, you know, it's not going to hurt you. You're not going to score fewer goals than not scoring goals at this point with Lucas up there. And, you know, I think another one that could be a little interesting, and it's been talked about a lot, especially last year, was, you know, do you go to the three in the back to kind of shore things up a little bit more? Now, I don't know if Milos, Jonathan, and Josh fit together as a three in the back, really. You know, it's not FIFA where you can just throw guys out there. There has to be some sort of chemistry and whatnot. But I know that's something Caleb's explored before. We saw it in the Campiones Cup. We saw it against Philadelphia last year. It didn't work against Philadelphia, but that's a whole nother story. But I do think, you know, if you do that, then you have some options in terms of what you want to do with the wing backs. You can either keep Pedro and Steven out there. You could play more wingers with Derek or Yao or James. You can tweak how you want to do it in the midfield. Do you play two up top? Maybe push Lucas further up alongside Miguel. I just think that would give you a little bit more security at the back. So maybe these mistakes that you've had aren't as costly. And again, I don't think they've been bad defensively, but you know, just another center back there is another idea. Now I don't know if that helps you goal scoring wise, but maybe you can eke out some results somewhere in there.
I kind of like that just from an attacking perspective, where now you're creating, you've got two guys higher. The rest of it from when you have the ball from a possession standpoint is the same. You still have wingers. The midfield is still generally the same, and you've got another guy up there. I don't hate it. I don't know if he'll do it. Obviously I'm not in the room, but I think anything would be a welcome change at this point. The thing that I think Caleb Porter believes in this as well, they're not necessarily, they don't need to change how they play in terms of trying to keep possession and how they attack, how they defend, but maybe the areas that they kind of occupy with their formation can be adjusted to be more effective for the group that they have. I think that's a diplomatic way of saying it.
Sam, Bart, anything else that you guys thought of that we haven't touched on that would be an interesting look for this team? You're on mute, Bart. Welcome back to Zoom.
There we go. Yeah. There we go, baby. I've got two ideas. I mean, I had three, but the Aiden Morris one, you know, finding a way to get him on the field, that was in there. My first idea, or my second idea, I should say, is just dress Crew 2 in the Crew uniforms and see if people don't notice. Just, I mean, send Crew 2 out there. Let's just
actually
see what
keep
happens.
Them keep them in the Crew 2 jerseys since
yeah, because they're better. Awesome. They're better. And that you know, that brings me around to my second idea, which is bring back the jerseys from last year and get rid of the C logo. It's just bad. It's bad luck. It's bad juju. It's I think that we wouldn't be in this position if they hadn't done the rebrand. Everything would be okay. It wouldn't be Caleb Porter's fault. Caleb Porter we'd be talking about, should Caleb Porter have a lifetime contract if they had not done the rebrand? But they did that. And so those are my two ways without making any, you know, player personnel and then transfers or doing, you know, my FIFA, you know, those are the two other changes I'd suggest.
I think everybody likes the logo one. I don't think you'll find much argument there.
Bart will have the full support of the fans here for both of those. Sam, anything else that stood out or that stands out in your mind?
No, the only change is not something that they have on the roster right now, and they have to, to a certain degree, they kind of have to hit a home run for it to be a salvageable season, because they're going to have to go on a hell of a run in the second half to try to make up all the lost space or hope, you know, everybody in front of them crashes and burns. But I got nothing really. But at this point, again, you don't really have a ton to lose. Why not start even introducing more changes?
Yeah. And like start I said, Hurtado. I do think that'd be something. And I do think that they're, you know, I know that
he can't score any less goals than Miguel Berry.
Right.
He literally just
He had the shot on goal from the forward on Saturday.
That header. Yep.
Yeah. But I know that they have worked on a number. I mean, we've seen it. We've seen them switch formations. We've seen adjustments tactically. I think what we're talking about is potentially a bit more extreme, but you know, there's also the kind of element of surprise. If, you know, you throw something a team hasn't seen yet at them. And I think that kind of worked in Kansas City a little bit. So, you know, we'll see if they actually end up doing anything this drastically different.
One more thing I'd like to add, and I know they used to do it. They kind of went away from it. They did a little bit in we're having trouble scoring goals. Why not just try and press really high and put the other, especially a team like Atlanta that's going to play out of the back, put them under some pressure and try and manufacture some turnovers and some offense from that way. That's not a Caleb Porter. That's not something I would say that he's would be known for, something he's probably done a lot of before. But it's manufacturing offense. It's kind of like we talked about hockey earlier. It'd be like the equivalent of just like putting the puck in deep and hoping something happens, right? So put you know, keep the ball in their half and try and be aggressive and create some turnovers. And then you let guys like, you know, Zellerion and Nagby and those guys kind of have some space when they win the ball to go and kind of attack. Just a thought I had. I saw something from Matt Doyle on MLS Soccer that Nakura, like, they play at like the slowest pace in the league. It's a way to speed things up. Cause clearly playing slow again is easy to defend and not working anyway. So that's the last kind of thing that I wanted to throw in there. I don't think we'll see that, but I would be thrilled if we did.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, I know, you know, if you go from being a team that doesn't really press, it's hard to do it mid-season.
Yeah.
At a high level, just because of fitness and things like that. I watched Manchester United fail with that all season. and that was miserable, but you know, in MLS, I think you could find triggers and things.
Yeah. Can you do it for like certain opponents too, like Atlanta, who, right, you know, is going to play out, but maybe against, yeah, Red Bull, you don't need to do it because they're just going to kick it anyways.
Right. Well, and you saw, I mean, you know, speaking of Greg Berhalter a little while ago, the US Mexico game in Cincinnati, they came out and pressed for 20, 25 minutes and then, you know, create a few chances, didn't score, but create a few chances. And it really threw Mexico off. Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned Atlanta. That's probably the last thing we need to talk about here is this game this weekend. Crew traveled down to Mercedes-Benz Stadium for that game. I think this will be interesting. Atlanta hasn't been the team that, you know, was looking like they might be a dynasty at one point in time in MLS. Obviously there's been a lot of changes, both coaching wise and player personnel wise, since they won that MLS Cup. They're in an interesting situation, you know, kind of similar to the Crew in terms of underachieving so far. They sit on 16 points, 3 points ahead of the Crew, 4-4-4. They haven't lost at home, 3-0-3, but you know, it's a place that the Crew has had some moderate success over the years. Adam, you'll probably dive into them a little more later this week, but I'm sure you've seen them a little bit. What's your take on this year's Atlanta team?
I actually think they're similar in a lot of ways to the Crew in terms of how they try and play. I think they play at a little bit faster pace. They're definitely more willing to try and counterattack when they win the ball back. But in terms of when they're on the ball, they do a pretty good job of keeping it. I know last year I think they made the playoffs last year. They're pretty bad for a long time, but they had like the highest possession rate in the league. I'm sure they're up near the top again this year. Defensively, they kind of do a little bit of everything. I would expect them, just like we see most teams do, to probably sit in a pretty middle to low block and try and defend that way. But they're going to be good, and it's a really tough place to play. It is a place where the Crew have been successful. Is that where our last road win was? That was last year, right around this time. Have we won on the road since then?
That might be. I'd have to go back and look that up.
It was Mensa who scored off that.
Yeah.
Corner, right?
Yes. Another thing the Crew don't do anymore, score off corners.
Yeah. Well, that goes – no, we're going to get all the way back into it.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, I guess that's true. I did just see on Twitter as we were coming on here, filming this, they're recording this Monday night. Andrew Gutman out for 6 to 8 weeks for Atlanta. So a guy who's been a factor for them. You know, certainly they've had their fair share of injuries over the last couple of years. Well, we might as well just go into predictions. We've gone pretty long here talking about all this. Sam, how do you see this going in Atlanta this weekend?
Fairly miserable, and I think they lose 2-0.
Short and sweet. Bart, what do you think?
God, I didn't even have time to think of an excuse for the Crew to win, but they'll win 2-0 with a Josh Williams goal.
You know things are going.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel about it. I didn't even have my heart in it at all. And
watch, Milos will start this game.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, at least you can watch Champions League football before you watch this game. So there's that this weekend. Adam, what do you see from this game?
I'll be optimistic. I think we definitely can win. I'll say same as last time, 1-0 off a set piece. I'll say that Mensah gets his head on one, but I would expect it to actually, I shouldn't say expect. I hope it will be a different type of game than the one we've seen the last couple of weeks. So,
yeah, I was positive last week thinking the Crew were going to beat LAFC and they did not. So I will be slightly positive. I will say they get a 1-1 draw. That means that they have to score a goal. So I think we see something different though. I think Caleb will tweak something. Maybe it's going back to the 4-3-3. You know, I do think the pressure is starting to mount a little bit. And, you know, I think he knows that even last week, he just wasn't himself during media availability. And I don't, you know, could be other things, but certainly I think he's starting to feel it a little bit and knows that they've got to, you know, if they're not winning at home, they need to at least get results on the road. If they can find a way to grind out another result on the road, I think they'll take that. So yeah, I'll go with a draw, 1-1.
Where do you think that if they draw, where does that leave him with the fan base?
The Twitter fan base, the actual people that show up to the games. I mean, there's so many different segments of this group. It's true with all fan bases. I mean, you have your people that are angry on Twitter all the time, and you have your people that actually know what they're talking about on Twitter all the time. You know, I understand the frustration. I really do. I everything Bart said during this, and I think Bart is very much our representative of the supporters section and all that. I think there's no way you can sugarcoat that this hasn't gone well. And Caleb is at the forefront of that. And, you know, I've been slow to even bring this topic up. I've deflected it when people have asked me about it. But, you know, I think it is something that's going to need to be talked about here unless they start, you know, winning games here very soon. Like I said, I think you've got to give them a shot this summer. But Bart made a really good point about where they sit in the standings. You know, I guess I just hadn't looked at the standings all that much. So. You know, there's pressure there, no doubt about it. And the seat is starting to heat up if it wasn't already, I would imagine.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Sam.
I really do think that at this point, it probably almost doesn't matter what or how this team does. I think the ill will, maybe not even intentional, but between Caleb and this team and the fans is not. Like the fans are, there used to be a banner in the Nord deck that said the natives are restless. They're restless. I don't think there's anything that can bring them back from their restlessness against Caleb specifically, outside of him maybe winning another MLS Cup.
Yeah, could be. I don't know. I mean, I think we'll learn a lot about the actual team itself this week and how they respond, because I agree that I think it's the Caleb's seat is getting hot. I think the players, I agree that it seems like the majority of us are frustrated, and I'm sure they know that and they feel that and they see that, I'm sure, to a certain extent. So I think, you know, this week should hopefully tell us a lot about where the group is mentality wise in terms of if there's a response or not. If there's not a response, then I think that's a pretty bad sign. But
yeah, well, I can tell you this. They're definitely frustrated. Caleb's frustrated. But you're right. Yeah. That needs to translate into a response on the field. All right, we'll wrap this up. Adam, thank you for pinch hitting tonight, to use a different sports metaphor, since we've talked about a couple of them here. Brian will be back to take his chair hopefully next week. Bart, Sam, I hope to see you guys in person next week at Saucy, but I'm glad we were able to have Adam on doing it this way. I've made my feelings about Zoom very clear. I hate this thing, but it was nice to get Adam on here and hear him talk about the team a little bit. So thank you guys for tuning in. Like, subscribe, listen to Brian's station because they play good music and we like Brian. And check out Saucy if you're out and about in the is that? Old Harrison West area of Columbus?
Yep, Harrison West.
Third in Michigan, yeah. All right, thanks guys. Appreciate you guys coming on. Appreciate everyone listening. We will talk to you next week. Hopefully we're talking about a crew surprising win.